This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Adrienne Hill. Housing is back in the headlines this week, and as you know from the show, the housing market's pretty much been on fire the last 6 months. Almost all the news this week has been positive, too. New home sales up, existing home sales up, pending home sales up, mortgage rates up. Oh, wait, that last one is not so good. People hoping to buy a new home are going to have to pay more in interest now than they would have any time in the last year. And there's a question as to whether or not that pretty much overnight rate jump is going to scare people off from buying. We've got Elise Glink here with some answers. She's a personal finance journalist and syndicated columnist writing about all things real estate. Hi, Elise.
Hey, hi, Adrian.
So what's going on with interest rates? Why are they up?
Well, they're up because, well, they're down, right? Let's have a little historical perspective.
Yes.
My first house when I bought it, I paid 11.75% interest rate.
Wow.
So that now makes me sound really old and really out of touch. But I will say that it's up a little bit because people are trying to decide in the bond market what the Fed is going to do. And right now, the Federal Reserve Bank has been buying to the tune of about $85 billion a month. All kinds of mortgage-backed securities, and that has been depressing the rate that you pay for your interest, and everybody else is paying as well. So banks are paying less, businesses are paying less, and home buyers are paying less.
And so what's the concern? Why are these numbers going up?
They're going up because there's some talk that the Fed might be ending, I think we're at QE3, mm-hmm. right? Quantitative easing number three. And they may be ending it soon. And everybody knows that when the Fed stops depressing these prices, that we are going to see interest rates go up. The question is, do they go up to where they were in 1993, which was 6.5%,
mm-hmm.
or do they go back up to where they were for the last 5 years, which was about under 5%?
Now, we've heard from some listeners that the jump is causing them pause. And Ben from Minneapolis is one of them. Hi, Ben.
Hey.
So tell us a little bit about where you are in your home buying process.
Well, we have a current very small house, and we've signed a purchase agreement for a brand new home that we, you know, did all the paperwork for, got a good faith estimate and all that. A good faith estimate was at 3.875%, which seemed high at the time that we got it, probably 3 months ago. And as of May 1st, I had asked about a long-term lock. We actually close in October, and I'd asked about a long-term lock, 3.6% or something around there. I checked yesterday, and it was at 4.25%, and that's a big difference in your calculus, both on a monthly payment and over the life of a loan. So that's where kind of we were at.
And so what's your plan? I mean, what are you going to do?
I guess I have to write it out. I'm going to find out when our official closing date is, which if you're buying a new home, you know, there's a couple different steps in there. But once that number, just determine, is this rate something that I'm comfortable with right now, and should I execute a long-term lock? But as you know, there's cost to that, and those seem very small compared to the rates over the long term. But that's, I guess, I'm trying to figure out what to do and looking for help.
What do you think, Elise?
So there are some signposts that, you know, the lay expert can look at, and you too, Ben, to think about where mortgage interest rates are going. I would say overall, I wouldn't pay for a long-term lock. And I also wouldn't think about that mortgage interest rates are going to skyrocket. I've actually heard that word used now relating to what's happened the last 3 weeks anytime soon. In fact, if you think about a signpost, the Fed has said over and over again that they're not going to stop the QE3 quantitative easing buying until we see the jobless rate, the unemployment rate, fall below 6.5%. Right now, it's about 7.5%. And it's higher in a lot of other areas. So they're going to keep putting pressure to keep interest rates super low. It is going to ignite the economy at some point in time. But for mortgage interest rates, what you're experiencing is sort of this bumpy bottom where they're going to bump up based on local news. And the minute that it seems like the economy's not doing well, they're going to fall down again. And you're still so far out from buying that house, from closing on it, I think you could give it another couple of months. And when you see one of these dips, that's when you lock in.
What sort of time frame do you think we're talking about, Elise, as far as these rates actually going up some appreciable amount?
Well, we're talking the last 3 weeks is where we've seen them rise up from the ultra low historic all-time low bottom, right? I
mm-hmm.
can't stress that enough. And now they're up about 0.5%. In another 6 months, I actually don't think we're going to see them up any higher. If we have a huge hurricane season and, you know, the Southeast gets hammered again, then we might see that economy look a little bit better. So home building might look a little stronger. So we might see them go up a little bit. But the first sign of bad news, we're going to see them go down. It's very tenuous what's going on out there. And there's a lot of external forces going on around the world. China's down with it, you know, where its growth rate is down. We see Europe it's in a 7-quarter recession. It's like the longest recession they've had since World War II. And things aren't looking so great down in Latin America. So there's a lot of pressure. U.S. just happens to be like the best of the economies at the moment. And I say that with a little bit of a laugh.
Right.
But it's true. And so, Ben, if you're looking for signposts, what goes on around the world dramatically affects what happens here in the bond market in New York and what will affect going on in your pocket. But if a half a point is going to make a big difference, what you have to think about and everybody else who's listening to us is, have I bought too much house for what I can afford? Because that's really the essential question. A half a percentage point shouldn't be a make or break moment for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us, Ben. This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm here with Elise Glenk, author of the syndicated column Real Estate Matters, and we're chatting about buying a house. We've been talking about this all week over on our Facebook page. And one thing that came up this week was the way the path to homeownership has actually changed over time. And I wonder what you think about that, Elise. If you bought a house 10 years ago and one today, what would be different? How has it changed?
Well, I think it's been it's much harder to buy a house today than it was 10 years ago. And I'm not being nuts when I say that basically if you had a pulse and a good credit score, you could qualify for 10 times your income.
10 years ago.
10 years ago. Yeah. That's where we were back in 2003 and 2004. Ah, the good old days.
Yes.
Today, you actually need to have a pulse and a credit score, and you have to have, you know, work, and they have to look at your tax returns. And there are a lot of hoops that you have to jump through that do make it harder for people who are on the edge to qualify. The vast majority of Americans are going to be fine, but credit score is important and your work history is important. And if you're self-employed, it actually is going to be tougher to qualify. There's a box that lenders have created. And if you fit inside the box, you can seriously get qualified in a couple of minutes on the phone. But if you don't fit into the box, if you've made an investment in a neighbor's business and it looks like there might be a $100 loss, huge red flags are going to go up and you might not get your loan.
So we've got Robert from Tustin, California on the line with us. Hi, Robert.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I understand you just closed on a condo. Congratulations.
That's correct. Thank you very much.
Tell us a little about it. What'd you buy?
I bought a 2-bedroom, 2-bath condominium in Tustin, California. It's a nice place. It's built in 1967, very good condition, and I was fortunately able to get it while interest rates are still relatively low.
So what was the process of buying like for you? How did it go?
For me, since this is my first home, the process was, on my part, I did purchase this with my mother, but for myself, I fortunately, all of my documentation, all of my work history, rental history has all been stored online. So for me, pulling these records and submitting the information that was requested was pretty quick. But when my mom was brought into the process, it became very stressful because, as you said, it was so easy to get a loan back 10 years ago, but now every single little thing about your life has to have a record. They have to have explanation. And for me, while I don't have anything to compare it to, it seemed a little bit more difficult than it used to be.
So, Robert, your mom came on as a co-signer, just to be really clear. But, Elise, I wonder, how common are these documentation issues?
Oh, I think that's very typical. And I love that you have everything digitized. And we tell people now that what you really do want to do is scan all of your records into the computer because you could be asked for them 3 and 4 times, and it wouldn't be unusual. I mean, it might be bad customer service on the bank's end. But for you, you should just go in expecting that this is a headache. But having it digitized and being able to email those papers, that's important. Your mom, this would be a lot harder for her. First, because she's probably not used to scanning and digitizing content. And then email, I know if it's like my mother, email is, you know, a little haphazard sometimes. But really, the process of making of proving to somebody your credit worthiness, and that's the difference. It used to be assumed, and today it's not. And proving every single little thing can be very exhausting for people, even if they're not in their 60s or 70s. It's just an exhausting process. It's mentally taxing.
Robert, your mom also owns a condo, as I understand it, that she bought back in 2001. How different was your process than hers?
A little bit. I do know that even though these both places were the same size, same bedrooms, same square footage, different areas, but I do know back in, she got her condo back in 2001, 2000, and the interest rate on mine is relatively, it's almost half of what she paid. Now, while I think compared to some other people who have 800 credit scores, I locked in at about 3.875. Some people have gotten closer to 3 or maybe under 3 6 months ago. I really can't complain at all because she had a 6.75 interest rate over 10 years ago. So I do know that with her, it was funny because because of this process, it's been a little bit more stressful now with all the letters of explanation required, everything that has to be scanned, in addition to the, you know, hundreds of pages of paperwork we did have to sign. She actually went off on one of our lenders. She was so stressful, saying, "It never used to be this way. I can't believe I have to do all this stuff." And she sort of took it out on them, and I was just apologizing, like, "She's such a nice lady. I love her. She's a sweetheart. She didn't mean this, but, you know, forgive her because this is all new."
You know, it's funny, Robert. This is a great opportunity, actually, for you to open up a conversation with your mom, since you've seen her have this little mental breakdown, but to have a conversation with her about her finances in a larger way and to help get her digitized and ready as she moves into or further into her retirement, if she's already there. Because, you know, this generation isn't all online, doesn't feel as comfortable sharing personal information, and yet for you and your the other heirs or siblings, if you have any, you're going to really want to help her as she ages. And this is such a great opportunity to go in and get her ready for the next part of her life.
That's great advice. Yeah, thank you.
Robert, thank you so much for your call. And Elise, thanks for your time.
Thank you both.
It's been a pleasure.
Personal finance journalist Elise Glink is the author of the book, 100 Questions Every First-Time Homebuyer Should Ask. Elise, thanks again.
Thank you very much.
If you're considering buying, we've got a list of programs that can help you think through it. It's on our website, marketplacemoney.org. And if you've got questions, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. I'm at Adrian Hill with one N. We're also there at Radio Piggy Bank.